You've done verse 7, I believe. Seventh verse you've done, I guess. Let's just chant the verse number 7, if we can. We have the book together. Let's chant it together. Mana Shuddhi Karani Ha Sadhanani Vadanti Ha Yajnyodanam Tapaschaiva Japastirtham Vratastatha. So the last verse that where it all ended last month, he is talking about the six means of the mental purification, the mana shodhanam, which are the yajnam, danam, tapas, japas, vrat, and tirth. See, what happens is in the study, in the spiritual practice, when we start studying, we have the main books like the Vedas and the Upanishads and the major Shastras. They tell us the absolute reality, the absolute truth, the Brahman, the Atman. And the ultimate message of Vedanta is that I am Brahman, the supporter of this whole universe. But then when we read that, when we hear about that, when we are in the class and when we go home, we're all doing our stuff. So at that time, say we are in the office and we have a dispute with somebody. I pick up a fight with somebody. When I'm talking, a friend is going to remind us, hey, you just came from the class, you're Brahman. Oh, keep the Brahman aside and let me take care of this first. Right? So at that time, when we have to have that knowledge, it's not available. So for having firm abidance in that absolute truth, the other kind of texts which are available are called Prakaran Granth. These are the texts that help us to prepare in our spiritual practice so that we can have firm abidance in that absolute truth all the time. The main scriptures are going to give us the revelation that this is it. How to get there are these kind of texts, the Prakaran Granth. Mana Shodhanam is one of them by Pujya Guruji Swami Tejavayananji. So in this text particular, he is talking about the various processes, the actions that we have to do to for our mental purification, so that we can have, or rather it can be easier for us to have that abidance in some amount. So this is, in fact, it's easier to read these kind of texts before studying a big, heavy-duty Upanishad or a Veda or something. And that's why in the major course also, when they have that at Sandeep in Mumbai, they start with these kind of texts first before going to Gita. In fact, I'm told that they study Bhagavad Gita towards the end. These are the texts that they start with. So anyway, so the point is to know the process on how to do that, and that's why we have a text like that. So here he is talking about the six means of mental purification or quietness of the mind, how to attain that. So let's read our next verse, which we have to do today, the eighth verse. I'll start. Vichara sadhanam shreshtham. Varnyate yatra yathamati mahatvam tasya vai proktam krishnena svayamevahi. Let's break it down. Vicharah sadhanam shreshtham. Vicharah means the inquiry, and sadhanam is the means, and shreshtham is the best. Varnyate atra yatha mati, mati is varnyate atra means here, which is described as yatha mati means according to myself. So that means this is Swami Tejamandanji talking. So he's saying that the vichar, which is described here, is considered to be the best means for mental purification according to me. Mahatvam tasya ve proktam. Mahatvam, it's the most important, most glorified. Tasya ve alone. Proktam krishnena swayameva hi. Bhagwan Krishna, the Lord himself, has spoken about this. He, putting more emphasis on that. So basically the statement would go by krishnena swayameva hi proktam vicharah sadhanam shreshtham. Varnate atra yathamati, according to me. So, Bhagwan Krishna has also said that with, out of all these six, the seventh one, which is the last one, which is vichara, is the best means for the mental purification. Now, what is this vichara? This vichara has V and char. So, char comes from the root word char. You know, we have probably heard about in the lectures when Anilji says char and achar. So char means moving. Like there's a word in Hindi, Devanagari, called achar, like a conduct. Char is moving, so achar is conduct, like how do we go about conducting ourselves? Like two people who are eating on the same table, one is eating with knife and fork and spoon, the other is going at the food with the hands and yapping at the food with the mouth open. So that's the difference in the conduct, how they are behaving differently. So that's the achar, conduct. So vichar is the self-inquiry. Vichar is vividham charati, different ways to look at the same point. How you look at the same point from different angles, different aspects. Or vishuddham charati, specifically paying attention to that thing, is vichara. So both are same. Looking at the same thing from different angles and specifically paying attention to that is vichara. See, we all act according to our understanding. And people can see us, how we act. But people don't know how we think. Thank goodness. What's going on in our mind? That will be a problem. And so we act according to our understanding, and our understanding is going to come from our way of thinking, how we think. For example, in this lecture, I'm saying the words are the same, but the intake of each and every person is different. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the lecture, when you ask like three people, what was it all about? So one is going to say something, second person is going to say, no, I don't think this is what he said. He said completely different. Mm-hmm. And the third person is going to say something different altogether. The point is our mind is going to process each and everything for each and every person totally, completely differently. And what does all this depend on? Our karmas, our upasanas, and our vasanas. But anyway, that's a big topic. So let's dwell on this, something very interesting that I was told to prepare this. See, I don't have the chart here, but we know the BMI chart, the body, mind, and the intellect. We all know that our body and our mind, they're different from each other. We all know that. Our body is insentient. It's like a wood or a cloth or something. What it means, it does not have the capacity to know itself. It cannot know by itself. The body cannot know. It's inert. And mind just for the help of understanding, although it is jada, but for the help of understanding, to make it simple, is the faculty by which we know the world outside. By the mind, we also know our body. By using the sense faculties that we have, the five sense faculties, eyes, ears, touch, taste, smell, etc. So by mind, we know the outside world and this body. So it learns, it processes the information, then it's going to create a response. So mind is essentially a flow of thoughts. Like we are sitting here listening, watching. So there is a continuous flow of thoughts. And when this thought flow flows and quietens and stops, that's a quiet mind. That is called transcending the mind. We all live in two worlds. There is an external world that we all know. We see the world, we see the objects. And then there is an internal world which we all live in, a mind, what we are thinking, what occupies us in our mind right now. So for example, we are all sitting here. We know that it's a comfortable room, has a carpet, warm enough. We are sitting peacefully. We are going to sit here for whatever time. At the end of that time, ask yourself, was your mind here all the time? The answer is going to be the same for all of us. No. That is what it is. The thought flow, it just takes off. The physically will be here, but the internal world is going to take us somewhere else. External surroundings may be very comfortable for somebody. Big house, good car, wealthy person, good. Two people, for external sake, smiling, greeting us, you know, very nicely. Next thing we know, after a few weeks, few days, few months, they are separate. The chemistries didn't match. The internal worlds collided. No, that reminded me of Jerry Seinfeld, you know. Right? Internal worlds collide. Remember, there was an episode about that. I'm sorry, it just occurred to me. I used to watch that when I was young. So the internal worlds collide. So they go away. And in our life, all of us, it happens. Everybody, we cannot deny the fact. After a few years of living, you know, we all work, we all have, you know, we have a decent living, we have a, you know, home and whatever, family. But we find out after some time that in our mind, if we don't have that relative peace and the happiness and the calm, we're not going to be happy no matter how much we have or how much money we have or how much bank balance we have. So if we are not successful in maintaining a peace and calmness in our inside mind, outside world will still be a failure. So the success in the internal world itself will bring about a success in the external world automatically. It will be a piece of cake. Not vice versa. It has to come from internal world. And for external world, it starts with our personal, you know, body appearance. There are industries for taking care of this flesh, oils, soaps, fragrances, different surgeries, clothes, beautiful clothes. We dress ourselves very nice to go in the party. We want people to look at ourselves. Nicely dressed person, beautiful, well combed. What hairstyle he has? I'm going to have the same hairstyle. Right? So that's the body part. Let's leave aside the mind part. Let's come to the eye, intellect part. We have schools, universities, internet, books, different subjects, physics, chemistry, biology. You all want to be very literate, learned. We'll surf the web, get as much knowledge as possible. So when we are going to a gathering or a party, we can yap. You know, people know how learned this guy is. He knows so much. So the body part we took care of, there's a huge industry. Intellectual part we took care of that. There's a big industry. What takes care of the poor mind? There's no university for this poor mind. So the body part, movie stars, you know, models. Beautiful, beautiful looking. We wonder how come they are so thin, right? And then we have the intellectual part. Maybe politicians are, maybe I'm wrong. They we cannot, maybe, you know, whatever group. But when the mind is not taken care of, we all know what happens to them. We don't have to name names, but we all know movie stars and, you know, other group. So poor mind is left alone. So who's taking care of our friend mind here? And if we look at the chart again, we have Brahman here, or Atman is here, the supreme consciousness. Then we have the body, mass, body, mind, and the intellect. So the whole problem then comes from the mind. The internal world that we have. The thoughts that we have. The anger, or the greed, or the hatredness, or the jealousy, or passion is here. That needs to, the flow of thoughts that needs to quieten down. So who does have a problem ultimately at the end of the day? This guy. So who's bound? See, they say about Atma and Anatma. Atma, or the ultimate truth, or the Brahman, is here. Everything else down here is anatma or unreal. So who is bound? What is bondage? Who needs to be free? Who has a problem? Atman is free. Atman is never bound. Brahman is never bound. This is the gentleman who needs to be free. And when this is unreal, that means it's not there. What bondage and what freedom are we talking about?
Thoughts.
Right, but they are unreal. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you a small story. We have some time. I don't think this story has been told. There's a German with some donkeys, right? Tell you that. It just came to mind from the thoughts. There was a gentleman who used to trade. You know, he used to take his, stuff on in the back of the donkeys. Quite a bit of donkeys. So he was traveling one night, and he still didn't reach his destination. So he saw an ashram with the Mahatma sitting there. So he goes in there and says, "Mahatma, can I please stay here overnight? And, you know, my donkeys can eat and drink some water and I can rest." And Mahatma said, "What do I care? You know, go ahead." So he goes and ties all his donkeys. He falls short of one rope for one donkey. So he is kind of scratching his head, what do I do if this donkey is going to run away? So he goes to the Mahatma. Mahatma says, "Okay, don't worry. Go to the donkey. Act as if you're tying him to the rope. Now chant some mantras from here." Okay. So he goes to the donkey, pretends to tie his neck with the rope, and then to a small fence. And Mahatma is chanting his mantra from the distance. So he does that. Then the guy walks to the hut. The donkey sits down quietly. So what a great Mahatma. With just mantra he did this. Donkey is not bound, there's no rope. In the morning, the gentleman wakes up. He does his breakfast, feeds the donkey, you know, gives him the water, food. And then goes to the Mahatma, "Thank you so much, Mahatmaji, and you know, you are a great help. I was able to spend the night here with you. So I'm going to go." He takes his ashirwad, blessings, and then goes. That one donkey was still sitting there. Our donkey, let's call him our donkey. So our donkey was still sitting there. He, you know, pushes him, cajoles him, you know, whips him. He doesn't get up. So he goes to the Mahatma, says, Mahatma ji, what have you done to my donkey? He's not getting up. He says, don't worry. Go to the donkey, act as if you're untying him, and I'll chant a mantra from here and it'll be okay. So, okay, he goes and acts as if he's untying the donkey, and he's, you know, does a mantra and chants and does this. And lo and behold, the donkey gets up and walks away. So that's our situation. With our thoughts and our emotions, we tie ourselves down. But it's not there actually. That reminded me of that. So, vichar is described by Bhagavan Krishna as the best means to reach him. The self-inquiry. To reach Bhagavan out of the seven means, the yajnam, jnanam, tap, jap, vrat, tirth, and vichar. Self-inquiry is described as the best means to reach the Lord. Take any questions?
Sure, feels like I'm tied to the pole. No, but I mean, I think the process sounds easy or simple in process, but like you said earlier, you know, that's a long story. That's a long lesson. And it's difficult, and I read and I underline, and but you know, this has been the holidays with family. It gets difficult to maintain. I find it, I get tired. And what do you, like it feels exhausting to stay centered. I do it. I stay centered. And they all have these experiences because I'm not arguing and I'm not being frustrated outside myself. I feel like I'm surrendering it. But in the end, I feel physically tired. Is that? Normal, ordinary? I mean, I find it difficult to maintain the discipline in my mind.
It is a very slow process. Very slow process. But the consistency is the key. For example, Tom Cruise, if he's going to play a part of a beggar in a movie, so when he's doing that role, he's going to have fun time in doing that role because he knows that nothing has happened to his entire kingdom of wealth if they're intact. And he's going to enjoy it. He's going to give it his best. He knows it's temporary. There's no way he can think that he's the actual beggar. So as long as you have this attitude that you're not the body, you're just a witness, and you're just playing the part of a wife, grandmother, friend. Mm-hmm. You have to have that constant attitude of being a witness. You're just a witness, all these thoughts that are coming, and we'll do the meditation on that today. Let it come and let it go. You are not that. It's not that we cannot say that, we don't say that I am body, right? We say, I'm suffering. I'm tired, right? That's how we identify ourselves. I'm tired. We don't say that I'm body and so, but no, I'm tired. That's how we identify that ourselves. But that is the whole exercise, knowing that who is really tired.
Oh, okay.
Because we already seen that I'm not the body and I'm not the mind and I'm not the intellect. So who's getting tired? It's my body who's getting tired, and I'm not the body. So let the body get tired. It's going to get tired. It is bound to happen. So when the body gets tired, we get old, we have illnesses. That is bound to happen. And once we realize the fact that, yes, we are not going to be young all the time. We are going to have this process of, or transition of young, adults, old age, and death. It's going to happen to all of us. Then, is that what I am? Because I know that when I was young, I know that when I was a young adult, now middle age here, I know that. So who is that that knows all that transition? Is my real nature? And it should not be a tiresome exercise, because it's the swarup. It's falling back into our own nature effortlessly. And it takes a long time. That is what is called a sadhana, with all these things that they have described up here. And two are major ones. Vivek is the capacity to discriminate between the real and the unreal. That's the Vivek. And the second one that is going to come as a result of Vivek, by knowing what is real and what is unreal, unreal being young, old, and dying, what is going to come from that is dispassion. What am I going after? So, dispassion is developing a state where I neither have a like or a dislike for something. I'm totally indifferent. Not careless, but I'm indifferent. Not being affected by the happy surroundings around me, or by sad surroundings around me. I'm just a witness or a watching. So having that attitude of indifferent, in the sense of I don't like or do not dislike, is the state of dispassion. That way I'm not going to run after something, because I know it's not going to last. When I was coming here, I was thinking about it myself. You know, being a young guy, you know, a few years ago, you know how young guys are, you know, that James Bond buff. You know, I want to go and watch James Bond or Tom Cruise movie. Seriously, I haven't watched Mission Impossible 3 and 4. I haven't watched last three James Bond movies. Because what I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to go and set, what's going to happen after that? What does it do? Sometimes it happens with food also. I want to eat that food, but what is going to do that? What is it going to do to me? You know, once you know, once you take yourself beyond, you know, okay, well, you like it. So we all indulge into that. We all fall into that. But then if we just pull ourselves back and see, okay, well, it's going to make me happy, but it's going to end. And then I'm back to square one again. Is that what it is? Who's getting happy from that? When I eat or when I watch, who's getting happier? Not my real self, which is all the time saying. If all of these things are changing in relation to something, because that's what it is. Something changes because there's something constant. That's what's relative. It's relative. Young or old or death is relative to something. So that constant factor is me. That is the eternal truth.
It's kind of a self, I don't know how to express this, but what I'm hearing by that constant is eventually the mind lets go because it's constant. It keeps coming up against the same truth, so we'll kind of give up.
We use the mind, and ultimately at the end of the whole process, we drop the mind also. And that's when we get there. Because mind, how can we use mind to get there? We have to use the mind, but mind itself has to be dropped. Because this is unreal. To get to the real, we have to use it as a vehicle, and then while we are getting there, it drops out. Because we realize that this is unreal. See, how do we realize? Who realizes? The self is already realized.
Mm-hmm.
How does self realize? The truth, ultimate truth is there. It's there. It's a fact. So, Brahman is not going to say that I am Brahman or I realize. It's a process, right? So how is that going to happen? Because it is free from action. And that is the truth. And mind, body and intellect are unreal. If they're not real, then how can they realize? Right? It will come to us slowly, slowly.
Well, in Christianity, they would call it grace.
God's grace.
That God's grace. It's not by our effort, but almost by our non-effort.
Yeah, he will. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. I mean, it's really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Once you do this, you know, it becomes so. It gives us such a good feeling from inside. But then remember, once we have that good feeling inside, remember we do that in meditation, that feeling is called rasaswad. We start enjoying it. And that is also we cannot have. We cannot have that enjoyment. Once we have that enjoyment, that then who's enjoyer? This person is not enjoyer. That enjoyment is also a witness. We are also a witness to that enjoyment. Total actionless. We will meditate on this today. Total actionless. No, not being a doer. Not an enjoyer. Which is a substratum of this whole world. You know how we take this example of in Gita class. Anilji has said this many times. This is a classical example in Vedanta. Rajju sarpa. Rope on a soap. Snake on a rope. Right? We hear this all the time. That rope is the real substratum. And snake is a superimposition. We think that there is a snake, but actually there is no snake. We throw a light on this, we see it's the rope. Same way, it's the ultimate reality, but we see all these objects superimposed on that reality, which is the truth. But we say this snake on a rope, right? Rope is straight, snake is straight, or whatever curse. We don't say elephant on a rope, right? We don't say lion on a rope. Why is that?
It's not similar enough.
Exactly.
We wouldn't be fooled.
Right? So, same way, whatever, it's identical, right?
Yeah.
That means the substratum is identical, I mean the superimposition is identical to the substratum. Same thing here. Whatever we see, the real substratum has to be that. That's why it looks all in this different shape and form, because it's all our imagination. That means everything, that again brings us to the same thing, everything, it's the ultimate reality or the truth. That's the truth, that's the substratum. But we see all this thing here. So that's why ghost on a post, not something else. It has to be identical. That's one of the ways to meditate on this. When we see an object, how do we meditate on that? That's me also. It's just that supreme energy or supreme consciousness in us. We are talking or doing whatever. But that ultimately there's no difference between this and this, or this piece of chair. All five elements, same thing. Raw material is the same. But the expression of the consciousness is different. There is existence in a dead body also. See, when we are in a hospital, when we are sick, right? And when we get well, we walk out of the room. So we say, Jesse is coming out, walking out. I shouldn't say, I'll use my name. Pankaj is coming out. But if I'm dead, they're going to bring my body on a stretcher. We're not going to say Pankaj is out. We're going to say his body is coming out.
You might say Pankaj's dead body is coming out.
Well, you're right. But again, the thing is, Pankaj is not coming out. His body is coming out, right?
Okay.
So Pankaj is not walking out. His body is coming out on a stretcher. So that is what my nature is. But we just name it like that. So it's just name and form.
I think it's just a habit. It's like you hear the truth, but if we are so conditioned to see the world a certain way, that's more the focus rather than twisting it. Like you were saying. And I guess that's the
It's doing more and more. If we take a medication 2 times or 3 times a day, we have to do this dose. I'm Brahman 2 or 3 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Just step back and do that. The more we do it, And ultimately, the more we dwell in it, it becomes a routine. And the more we do activities, whatever activities we do, you know, going out, you know, whatever activity, when we wake up, those thoughts are going to stay with us. That's what the thought pattern is, the thought flow is. That is what we are going to think about. So our mind is going to have some thoughts to think about the next day. So how are you going to quieten it? But it's a personal thing. Yeah. But what is described, you know, once somebody gets to that stage, the jnani, the jivan mukta, then to him it doesn't matter because he knows he is not the body. So for he could be indulging in like Gurudev, you know, he was all over the world doing stuff. At the same stage, Tapovan Swamiji, he was just at one place in the Himalayas. Mm-hmm. Nobody even knew him. It was because of our Gurudev that he is known. He never went anywhere. He was at one place. He is a Jivan Mukta, or Jnani. Our Gurudev is a Jnani. Different personality. One is all over the world, doing stuff, full of action. And one was not even known. Swami Raman Maharshiji in Arunachal, you know, South India. People know him because of his followers, because people used to go to him and ask questions. He himself didn't go anywhere. He didn't even talk. When people used to go and question him, he didn't even talk much. So people know him because of the people going to him. He himself didn't go anywhere. So it's like that. So having less activities based on, again, previous karmas and vasanas, the lesser activities we have, the more quiet mind is. And when we have more quiet mind, and in that quiet mind, we have the establishment of this knowledge, Vishuddha Bodha. In the quiet mind, the knowledge takes place.
Quiet mind is like the medicine that you're talking about?
Like quiet medicine is like the grounds. Mm-hmm. It's the grounds for having this knowledge to take place.
Okay.
These are all the medicines, you know, all the penance and the japa and the tapa and the vrata. These are all the means. And then ultimately we keep clear that, and the best of them is the vichar, the self-inquiry, by which we create the ground, empty ground, into which the knowledge is going to come into place. It's a very slow process, you know. He spent so much time. I was told to cover the ninth verse also, but we are already beyond our time.
That's okay.
I like to talk much. I like to bring it down, you know, make it very simple. So.
Appreciate it.